From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Vertebrate, Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. So, Bill Curtis, you were a network anchorman for many years.
I certainly was.
And when you decided to take a week off, what did you tell the audience?
Let me tell you about two magical words, Peter. On assignment. I can't tell you how many beaches, hot tubs, and casinos required lengthy investigative expeditions.
Fair enough. Well, we at Wait Wait are on assignment this week, so we're going to bring you some highlights from the recent past, starting with our interview with author Amy Tan. She's written a great many books, including The Joy Luck Club, but we did not talk about any of that. They like your hair, and I'm not surprised, because you grew up here in San Francisco and Oakland, all over the place. You moved around
a lot? That's right. Local girl.
Local girl. So where were you born?
Born in Oakland.
Born in Oakland.
Oaktown. Oakland, yeah. Oakland. Yeah. 41st, 51st, 61st, Highland Avenue.
Really?
It was everywhere.
Why were you moving around so much?
My mother believed in the American dream, and by moving up in the world, you kind of moved up 41st, 51st, 61st.
Yeah. But we have heard, Amy Tan, that you had kind of a wild side growing up. Is that true?
Who told you? I mean, what?
Actually, your bio on your own website. I don't know whether you know.
Oh, was it when I tried to run away with the German guy and get married in Austria?
That might have been it.
Or was it when
I'm interested
when
in
I was arrested for drugs?
Ooh, were you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Better than Oakland.
I think so. So what happened? You were arrested for drugs in Switzerland?
Well, you know, my father was a minister and I was so innocent. Everybody smoked pot and hash over there. I thought it was legal.
In Switzerland? And,
yeah.
How did you get from Oakland to Switzerland?
Boat.
That's a method, I guess. That'll work.
It was not a happy reason. My mother thought that our house was cursed.
Really?
Or that we were cursed and that we might as well move away and get away from the cursed house or at least move away and have a good time before we all died. And so we ended up in Switzerland.
Doing drugs.
It's a long story. Yeah, I just went a little crazy. You know, I used to go to church every day, and then suddenly I was in Switzerland. Snow, you know, and boys. And over there, all the guys thought I was cute. They thought I was exotic. They thought I looked like an Eskimo.
And you're like, this is awesome.
I was confused.
Yeah. So you made some choices that maybe you regret.
I did. I regretted it deeply.
Right.
I didn't get married, and I didn't stay in jail. I wasn't sent to jail. I was just arrested, and I had a promise I would listen to my mother and always obey her. And so I said, yeah, you know. And then
you can be arrested for not listening to your mother.
In Switzerland,
oh,
you can.
Man.
Really?
Yeah,
so did you?
My family and I are going there.
Yeah.
So did you in fact go straight?
Straight?
Well, meaning that did you keep your promises to your mother after your brushes with the law?
Yeah.
Yeah. For our radio audience, she's crossing her fingers.
I know.
I just busted you. I see. So what happened to the guy you were going to marry?
My mother, she hired a police detective. He happened to be the mayor of the town of Montreux because it was a very small town. And she gathered all this evidence, and he and all my friends were arrested and deported. So that is one way you get rid of your daughter's boyfriend.
How did you feel about this? I mean, there's one thing of like your mother disapproving of your boyfriend, another thing of like your mother having him deported with all his friends. That's another.
Well, actually, I was relieved because I really did want to break up with him. I mean, that is a terrible thing to say. I felt really bad because also when I saw him, she took me over to the border to see him. And that really put an end.
Wait a minute. She did what? She took you where?
She took me to the border to meet him after he was deported, which was really a smart thing to do because now the only reason I really liked him was to get back at her. But now she's taking me to the border. And, you know, we kiss and everything, and I'm thinking, oh, thank God, you know, it's bad breath and everything.
Oh, wow. So did you thank your mother?
No, of course not. I was 16, you know. Of course I didn't do that.
Your mother's very Machiavellian.
She was brilliant. She was, you know.
Now, you wrote about your family quite famously in the stories that became the Joy Luck Club, or at least as fiction, right? Was your mother there to see the book and read it and appreciate its acclaim?
She was my first reader.
And what did she think?
She loved it. I mean, she ended up thinking that I knew her so well that all the stories she used to try to tell me, like why she got mad at somebody. She used to go on for 3 hours, you know, and then she did this, and she betrayed, and then she'd say, after the book, she'd say, I don't have to tell you. You understand. You're just like me. Because she read the book. She's, you know.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's a great, I mean, every author or every would-be author imagines that moment of writing the book about their childhood, about their family, giving it to their family, and them saying, you understand so well.
And also mother saying, I don't have to go on for 3 hours.
Yeah. You just skip it. So instead of going on about somebody she disliked, she just gave you a page citation to the original edition.
Yeah.
And did she see the film?
She did. I was very nervous that she was going to faint or, you know, go crazy. And I was watching her at the screening, you know, and there were people crying and everything. And at the end, I said, are you okay? And she said, yes. And I said, it wasn't too much. She says, oh, no. In China, everything was so much worse. This was better. So
there you go.
I sobbed over that movie. I mean, just sobbed. And I had already read the book, which was brilliant. I love it. I'm an enormous fan. But this idea that you could write a book and then your mother would feel that she didn't need to go on and on explaining things. When my son hears this, he is going to go into his room and write. This is very good, I think, for kids to know that if you just write a book, then your mother will be quiet.
You don't have kids, but you have dogs.
I have dogs, yes.
Are you ever the stereotypical Chinese mom to your dogs?
Why did you do that? Why did you pee on the floor? Yes, I am.
You've brought shame to the family.
You brought stink to the family. You brought stink to the rug.
Have you had any dogs deported?
No, but I have threatened.
Well, Amy Tam, we are so delighted to talk to you. We've asked you here today to play a game that this time we're calling...
Amy Tan, meet Tan Amy.
Your name is Tan, but what do you know about tanning? We're going to ask you 3 questions about tanning and the tanning industry. Answer 2 of them correctly, you win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their voicemail. Bill, who is author Amy Tan playing for?
Sasha Fredericks of Oakland, California.
All right. People do some interesting things to get a great tan. Which of these is a popular, if controversial, tanning technique used in some U.S. salons? A, the full-body microwave oven. B, laying out on the top of skyscrapers to be closer to the sun. Or C, swallowing orange food coloring.
You know, I would want to go with A, but I'm going to go with B, because a lot of people like to get high.
That's true. I'm afraid it was C. It was swallowing orange food coloring.
Wow.
It's called canthaxanthin. It's a chemical used to make foods orange, and some salons sell it in pill form. You eat it, it turns you orange. The FDA does not approve. All right, still 2 more chances here, so this is good.
Oh, no.
You can still make your mother proud.
I'm nervous.
Let's say you want a tan and money is no object. You could go out and get which of these? A, a $350 single application of tanning lotion with real crushed up diamonds for that sparkly look. B, a $13 million trip in a Russian spacecraft with special starlight tanning time. Or C, a $500 session in the spray booth, a repurposed former car painting machine now spraying on tans.
I go for A.
You're going to go for A, the diamond tanning lotion? You're right.
Whoa!
Hey. Oh,
The product is called Diamond Tan. It's available at your high-end salons. It has actual diamonds in it, so you look sparkly, and you can sand your fine woodworking products with your skin. Okay, this is exciting. If you get this last one right, you win. Let's say you are really dedicated to tanning. It's what you love to do. Well, if so, you should invest in which of these? A stay at the Ritz-Carlton in Miami, where the tanning butler, his official title, will keep you oiled up and remind you when it's time to flip over. B, you can get yourself a membership in the National Association of Actually Colored People, a tanning advocacy organization. Or C, you buy a naked mole rat, which high-end tanners use as a kind of a canary in a coal mine. When the mole rat starts to sunburn, you know it's time for you to cover up.
That last one is a trick question.
You think?
Yeah. A.
You're going to go for A, a stay at the Ritz-Carlton with the tanning butler? You're right! If you're interested in having the services of the tanning butler at the Ritz-Carlton South Beach, rooms start at $329 a night. Book now. Bill, how did Amy Tan do in our quiz?
Amy got 2 right, and in our book, that's winning.
Yay. Yes, yay for Amy Tan.
Right.
Amy Tan's new novel is The Valley of Amazement. It's out in paperback now. Go get it. It's amazing. Amy Tan, thank you so much for being with us. Amy Tan, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me comes from Trunk Club. That's a men's outfitting service focused on simplifying the process of clothes shopping. Now, I hate shopping for clothes. What I do is I just walk into a store, close my eyes, point blindly at something, saying, I'll take 4 of those, and run out in a panic. That's why I'm wearing, even as I speak, these cereal boxes. But Trunk Club makes it easier. Every guy that uses Trunk Club is matched with a personal stylist who will get to know his individual preferences and styles, and they'll handpick a selection of premium clothing, pack it in a trunk, and then ship it home for try-on. Users have 10 days to try everything in the trunk, decide what to keep, and then they send the rest back. Shipping is free both ways. There's no monthly obligations. To try out Trunk Club's clothing discovery service, check out trunkclub.com/wait.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. So Bill and I are off on assignment doing important work in the field.
Or possibly at the racetrack.
Wherever the story leads us, Bill. So, while we are out of the office, we're bringing you some fun recent interviews. Last April, we were joined by Misty Copeland, a leading dancer with the American Ballet Theatre, who since then has become even more well-known thanks to a popular TV commercial.
I ended up training only for 4 years before I was accepted into American Ballet Theatre in New York City.
That's crazy!
Yeah.
Isn't it nuts? Because my understanding of ballet dancers is the apprenticeship lasts for years and years and years before
so she,
they get their chance.
She's like the LeBron James of ballet a little bit.
You know, one of the things about ballet, classical ballet especially, is it's obviously so incredibly strenuous. Mm-hmm. Except, and part of the aesthetic is you have to seem absolutely effortless. So whenever I see a ballet, I always imagine that the people dancing around on their toes are constantly thinking to themselves, ow, 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 ow. Is that true?
On some days.
Yeah.
We do talk on stage to each other, and I think some people think, why did I choose this career? Why am I doing this?
Wait a minute. You said you talk to each other on stage?
We do.
What do you say?
The artistic director may not want to hear that, but we have full-on conversations depending on, how rigorous the part is.
Really?
So during the show?
What are you having tonight for dinner?
Wait a minute!
Are you going out to the club?
So you're telling me, if I go see the Nutcracker and the Corps de Ballet is back there and they're doing, the Sugar Plum Fairies, they're dancing around on point, and they're saying to each other, so what are you doing tonight? Oh, nothing. What about you? Oh.
And do you have to, wait for the person to come back around before you get your answer?
And do you talk smack sometimes? Let's see you jump with my foot on your shoe. Ha! I bet they do that. Oh, I'm going to go to the ballet tomorrow.
Yeah.
Suddenly, it's come alive for me.
I don't mean to get personal, But looking around on the internet, your legs are quite the thing.
You know how to talk pretty to women.
I do.
I was on the internet and I was looking at you on the internet.
No, seriously. There are like. I'm just saying.
Quite the thing, both of them.
I'm saying that when your career in the ballet ends, which hopefully won't happen for many years, you can get a job for like the NYPD kicking down doors for them.
I don't think that's what you're supposed to say to a woman.
Yeah, you can kick some doors down, babe. Yeah.
Those legs, man.
So one thing I've always wondered about people like yourself, because I am a terrible dancer, and so whenever I'm at a party or whatever where there's dancing, I do not dance. I am on the sides.
Uh-huh.
You are one of the greatest dancers, in the world. So when you're at a party and like the dance music starts up, do you say to yourself, "Now it's my time"?
Absolutely not.
No?
No.
You're like a mutant with superpowers, and yet you won't show your powers.
Kind of.
Can you twerk? I mean, you could twerk, right?
Hilarious. Come on. You can twerk. Come on.
I get down. I listen to a lot of hip-hop and R&B and soul. I don't know if I've ever twerked.
I think someone would have noticed, Misty. I think it would have been quite the YouTube sensation had you done it. Well, Misty Copeland, we're delighted to talk to you. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Hey, Nani Nani.
You are a classical ballerina, but classical ballet is a newfangled upstart compared to Morris dancing, which scholars believe originated one night in the Middle Ages when some guys got really, really drunk. We're going to ask you three questions about Morris dancing. Get two right, you win our prize. Carl, who is Misty Copeland playing for?
Misty is playing for Barbara Woods of Anacortes, Washington.
Now, before we get started, let's establish what Morris dancing is. It is a very old kind of British folk dance, and they put on these costumes with bells, and they dance about in like county squares. And
like Game of Thrones stuff?
Yeah.
All right, so now that we've established that, here's your first question. As we've said, Morris dancing is ancient. People do like to mix it up. Which of these is a new trend in Morris dancing? A, hip-hop Morris, in which dancers dance to rap hits from the likes of Jay-Z and Lil Wayne. B, goth Morris, in which dances are changed into weird satanic-like rituals. Or C, Morris the cat dancing, in which dancers incorporate licking themselves and coughing up hairballs.
Oh, wow. I feel like A seems the most normal.
Hip-hop Morris?
Yeah.
Actually, no, it's B. It's goth Morris is the latest thing. Yeah.
I thought goth went out in the 90s.
No. They're just getting around to it in England, apparently. That's okay. You still have two more chances, Misty, so you're gonna get this, I'm sure.
Okay.
Now, Morris dancing has spawned all kinds of spin-off industries because it's popular, as in which of these? A personal injury lawyer specializing in Morris dancing injury claims, like being hit in the face with a Morris stick. B, No Morris, an iPhone app that helps you avoid any Morris dancers in your area. Or C, Errol Morris dancing, a form of the dance, and when you merely stare at the audience and say very little.
I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with Errol Morris dancing? Yes. It's like, and tonight, the Errol Morris dancers present a fog of war. The dancing Robert McNamara. So you're going to pick that. You're going to go for... I admire your boldness, Misty Copeland, but I'm just going to ask you to confirm. Are you going to pick Errol Morris dancing?
I feel that you're telling me not to.
I see you have the sensitivity and soul of an artist.
A?
A, yes, it's A. Apparently, Apparently, if you're in a Morris dance troupe and you injure yourself like getting hit with a Morris stick, you could be able to sue your own Morris dance troupe. All right, if you get this last one right, you will win everything. Having been around for a very long time, Morris dancing has inspired a number of jokes. Which of these is a classic Morris dancing joke, sure to get a laugh in Morris dancing circles? A, three Morris dancers walk into a bar and immediately get thrown out because everybody hates Morris dance. B, why did the Morris dancers cross the road? Because they were being chased by a mob because everybody hates Morris dance. Or C, why do Morris dancers wear bells so they can annoy the blind as well?
Sounds perfect.
C is in fact the right answer. Yay! That is the classic Morris dance joke. Carl, how did Misty Copeland do in our quiz?
Well, she had enough correct answers to win, Peter, so she is a winner.
Well done, Misty.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now we'll go right from somebody accomplished and interesting to a pure hunk of eye candy.
Why, thank you, Peter.
Actor Rob Lowe joined us last year, and in fact, we asked him about the salacious rumors that swirled around him that he once watched C-SPAN to check out the ladies.
No, it wasn't C-SPAN, it was MTV.
Well, that makes more sense.
I wasn't necessarily looking for Mensa members at that point in my life.
But you're beautiful. Why you gotta do that? I mean... I understand.
Yeah, it was, if I saw an interesting-looking girl on the latest, police video or Kaja Gugu extravaganza, I'll take girl in black dress, third one to the right, whatever.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
And did this work for you? Did you call them up this, hello, I'm Rob Lowe, and I would like to go out with you, and they'd all say yes?
In all truth, I only did it once, and it did work. And I ended up dating that particular young lady for about a year.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
I had quite good luck with it, maybe should have gone back to it, but never did.
So the C-SPAN thing was just a terrible rumor, because I was excited about this.
Yes, I did at one point watch Fawn Hall testify in the Iran-Contra hearings, and I tracked her down. That's true.
Nice.
Did you really?
Yes, it's true.
So the rest of America was like looking at the Iran-Contra hearings and going, oh, what a terrible extra-constitutional potential crime against this country. And you're like, so she hid it in her underwear, did she? We need to, and you probably have gone through this before recently, but you recently said something that got picked up about how hard it is for attractive people in Hollywood.
Yes, it's a condition that affects worldwide at least 15 or 20 people a year.
I know. I can imagine all you guys doing one of those 24-hour telethons to raise money for attractive people.
We're trying. I've reached out to Zac Efron and Ian Somerhalder and some of the leaders in this area.
Yeah, I understand. People afflicted.
And it takes an entertainer and slash journalist of your stature to bring this out of the shadows. So first of all, thank you.
This is NPR. We tell the sad stories.
The effects of terminal good lookingness are so severe.
It can't be cured, I'm told.
It can't, only by death or old age.
I want to give you a chance to be serious if you want to. I mean, did you find, because let's face it, you're a good-looking fellow, that you weren't considered for certain roles that you might have wanted?
No, I think what it is that there is a certain irony when, I will have finished coaching my kids' sixth-grade basketball team at the Y, and a studio executive will say, this movie we're making about a sixth grade basketball parent, nobody would look like you, so no. And that's you go, wait a minute, I actually am in the PTA. What do you mean, PTA dads don't look like me? I'm a PTA dad, so.
Rob, what time are your PTA meetings? But it's like where,
you're
when?
Welcome anytime. You're welcome to come by.
All right, I'll just swing by. But
you know what? I would have think you've been fine for a long time. You've been in Tiger Beat. You was a teen throb. I would think if you were in Tiger Beat, you would have figured out how to be. Hey, I'm gorgeous. I look like Tom Brady, but in my own way, I'm doing it.
Tom Brady, I like that.
So you have a new book out, which I enjoyed. It's called Love Life.
Yes.
You tell this story. You talk about how you did this show called Lion's Den. It was supposed to be your big follow-up to West Wing, I think.
Yes.
And you played this lawyer in this law firm, and the show didn't go well for a variety of reasons. And they canceled it, but they allowed you guys to finish shooting the season so they could sell it on DVD, right?
Yeah, so the show is canceled. It's not on the air. It's over.
Right.
But they say to me, you're still going to make 13 more episodes, but nobody's ever going to see them. Maybe we'll release them on DVD in, like, Bratislava.
Right.
So with that as the backdrop, the writers and I decide, you know what? To hell with it. We're going to burn the bridges. We decided to write my character as a sociopathic maniac who is revealed to be a mass murderer. And Kyle Chandler is the mentor in the office who is always my rival. He comes in one night while I'm eating in the executive dining room and confronts me on evidence that I might be a mass murderer. I walk up, stab him to death with my steak knife, sit back down, eat my steak, wipe my mouth, go to the balcony, and throw myself off. That's the end of the series.
You know, even though I had read that story in your book, a tear came to my eye. That's so moving.
And this is how little the studio and the network cared about the show. When we told them we were going to write that, they were like, that sounds great.
Well, Rob Lowe, it is a delight to talk to you, and we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Welcome to the Brat Pack.
You were famously a part of Hollywood's Brat Pack in the 80s, but what do you know about brats? That is, bratwurst, the famous sausage that often comes in packs of six. We're going to ask you three questions about bratwurst. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Rob Lowe playing for?
He's playing for Lily Alba of San Diego, California.
All right, you ready to play?
Absolutely.
There are many types of bratwurst available for your very own sausage fest, including which of these: A, human flesh taste bratwurst, B, gummy worm bratwurst, or C, wood pulp bratwurst.
I'm going with wood pulp bratwurst.
Wood pulp bratwurst. Sounds good, but it's gummy worm bratwurst. And it's just what it sounds like. You get bratwurst with gummy worms in it. I don't know why people want this, but they do.
That is disgusting.
It is. Now, if you're a real bratwurst fan, you can go to the Bratwurst Museum in Germany, Thuringer, of course, where you can enjoy what attraction at the Bratwurst Museum? A, the Bratwurst Hall of Kings, where they have bratwursts carved to look like every ruling prince of Germany. B, the Bratwurst Theater, where you can enjoy a bratwurst-centered romantic comedy. Or C, the gift shop, where you can get all your purchases wrapped in a pig intestine just like bratwurst.
I'm going to go with the Hall of Kings.
The Hall of Kings, where the ruling princes, the Hohenhausen, done up as carved bratwurst.
Yeah, I like that. That's intriguing to me.
I like your spirit and I like your bravery, but I wish I could like your answer. It's the Bratwurst Theater.
Ah.
According to the Google translation of the museum's website, it is, quote, authentic, unique, fascinating sausage theater must have seen.
Oh, so that's what they're calling it.
Yes. Last question. Bratwursts have been known to show up in the police blotter. As when which of these happened? A, armed robbers stole a truck of bratwurst in Janesville, Wisconsin, only to be found lolling around semi-conscious a day later around a greasy barbecue. B, a Des Moines woman was arrested for attacking another woman with a cooked bratwurst as a weapon. Or C, police in Columbus broke up an underground bratwurst ring selling non-USDA-approved pirate sausages.
Listen, anytime the phrase pirate sausage is used...
Oh, yes. I like your choices, but in fact it was the Des Moines woman who was attacked. She attacked her friend with a bratwurst. She was arrested. They took the victim's greasy stained blouse as evidence. Carl, how did Rob Lowe do in our quiz?
Rather lousy, Peter. Yeah. Sorry, Rob. No correct answers.
I'm so sorry I let everyone down. I cannot tell you how demoralizing this is.
Rob Lowe's autobiography, Love Life, is out now. Rob Lowe, thank you so much for being on our show. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Peter here. One of the best things in our show is when somebody doesn't know an answer. Let's admit it, flailing is funny, especially when Mo Rocca does it. Now, that is not true, of course, in every area, for example, when it involves your financial future. That's why our sponsor, the more than 71,000 certified financial planner professionals, want you to make sure you work only with a financial planner who's been properly vetted to uphold the highest standard in education and experience and is required to put your interests above their own. Visit letsmakeaplan.org and find a CFP pro near you. Thanks to our sponsor, and now back to the flailing.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you all. So, we're spending the week taking stock of where we've been to better chart the course where we're going.
I've always said, Peter, life is a highway. I want to ride it all night long.
One of our favorite interviews during the past year took place at one of our favorite places, the Red Rocks Amphitheater outside Denver, Colorado.
I felt like Bono from U2. Well, even more than I usually do.
For our special guest, we invited Michaela Schifrin, only 19 years old and already an Olympic gold medalist ski racer. I asked her if she had been born on the slopes.
Yeah, so I came out and at the top of the mountain and I just
slid
right
down. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
and the you know, the OBGYN is down at the bottom.
Like,
at
the lodge.
Waiting
harder.
Waiting for you to come. But you must have grown up skiing, right?
I did. Like everybody grow up skiing. Did. Yeah, I started skiing when I was 2 years old.
2 years old?
Well, I mean,
how big are those skis?
Really small. They're like really small.
Like a ruler?
Yeah, like a ruler.
That's like American Doll accessories.
Yes. It is. Perfect. I never even thought of that. I had my American Girl doll and the horse and the whole thing, and I should have put her on skis.
It would have been awesome. It would have been awesome.
What was I thinking?
And how old were you when it was like, oh, she's good. You're good at this.
You should have my mom on here, or my dad. When I was 3 years old, I thought I was very good at skiing.
Really?
No.
So I thought that too, but I was really wrong.
Well, you're good at this. Did you think you were going to be good at this when you were three?
No, when I was three, I was pretty much going to be a skier.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry.
It's
some
all right.
Dreams don't come true.
If somebody said...
Yes? Nice Olympian talk, by the way. Some dreams don't come true.
Here she is. Campbell's Soup presents Michaela Schifrin saying, to hell with you losers.
Dream big, but keep a small dream, too.
Yeah.
No. But don't be upset if it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
No, I'm actually kind of serious because I assume in growing up in Vail, everybody skis, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Mostly, yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's an expensive sport, so you want to be, like, cautious about saying everybody skis because some people don't have the luxury. But I fell in love with sport when I started to ski gates. Once I was allowed to start training gates around 6 years old, then I really fell in love with it.
6 years old.
Well, I mean, NASCAR, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there was that dry period between 3 and 6.
Yeah. Yeah.
Michaela, you know what I never understood? I thought in the old days when I would watch the Olympics that they weren't supposed to hit the thingy.
That's because...
Let me translate from Paula. What she means is that now, when you watch someone like yourself, you're actually... running over the pole, the gate.
The gate.
You're knocking it over as you pass it.
That's good terminology.
Thank you. But in the old day, I'm trying to explain. But in the old days, it seemed as like you weren't allowed to touch it.
Well, in the old days, it was bamboo, and so it really hurt when you touched it. And people still tried, and they got bruises. And now they're plastic, and they have these, I don't know, it falls over when you hit it. But you still get bruises, so... The whole point of the sport is not about hitting the gates. It's about skiing down as fast as possible. So...
Why not use, like, colored snow?
Because then you can ski around. Well, I don't know.
Well, I want to talk, because I've watched a lot of ski racing, and it seems so intense. When you're up there at the top of the mountain, and there's always that moment, the camera's right on you, and there's clocks down. What are you thinking as you're about to go? Are you thinking what I would think, which is, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no?
Yes.
Are you really?
A lot of times I'm thinking I'm going to die.
Wow.
That's... Well, it depends. Most of the time I'm pretty confident because it's, you know, I've been ski racing for a while, so I'm confident. But every now and then there's a moment where you're like, I'm freezing, I'm wearing a spandex suit, so I'm pretty much naked. I have this really ugly helmet on, and I'm painting it to make it look pretty, but everybody knows helmets are not.
Wait a minute, are you telling me you're up there like at the Olympics with literally the eyes of the world on you, and you're getting ready to ski for Olympic gold, and you're thinking to yourself, this helmet does not flatter me. That's what's going through your head?
Yep.
Yes,
this ain't cute.
Is that what held you back, ages 3 through 6?
The accessories weren't cute.
Yeah.
Those were really the dark years. I sense that.
All right, Michaela, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
It's the cheese after it.
So you might think that downhill ski racing is dangerous. Then you have never seen the Gloucestershire cheese rolling races. For centuries in Britain, competitors have hurled their bodies down a frighteningly steep hill. None of that snow stuff, mind you, to cushion the fall. Chasing a wheel of cheese. Sure, one year, 33 people had to go to the hospital. But the winner gets... to keep the wheel of cheese.
Yeah.
Beats some metal, doesn't it? We're going to ask you 3 questions about the great Gloucestershire cheese races. Get 2 right. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their voicemail. Bill, who is Olympian Michaela Schifrin playing for?
Randall and Beth Ferguson of Denver, Colorado.
Sorry, Randall.
All right, here's your first question, Michaela. Every spring, men and women gather at the top of this very steep hill in Gloucestershire, and then they race to see who gets the cheese. According to local experts, the best strategy for winning the race is what? Wait at the back of the pack for everyone to fall down the hill and hurt themselves, then slowly walk down the hill to win the race. B, get drunk first. Or C, lie down across the hill and just roll, the strategy being known as being the cheese.
I'm gonna do B, get drunk.
You're gonna go B?
Yes.
You are correct. It is get drunk first. It is a very steep hill. Really steep. And most people believe nobody entirely sober could hurl him or herself down it. Don't get too drunk, though. Just drunk enough is the wisdom. That's good. You got one right. There are a lot of injuries. Racers go flying. The videos, like I said, are horrifying. So last year, the local authorities tried to stop it from happening by doing what? A, telling the 86-year-old woman who makes the cheeses that she would be liable for any injury. B, passing a law requiring all cheeses to be manufactured in a square shape. Or C, just bulldozing that hill flat.
A.
A. You're confidently choosing A.
Yeah.
I like your style. You're right. Yes, that's what they did.
How could you make everybody agree to make cheese in a block shape? It comes in the ovular...
Ovular?
Wheel. It's a word.
Yeah.
In my dictionary. Yeah. I'm 19.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm in the age of technology and creating your own words.
Ovular.
You are right. Diane Smart, 86... has made the cheeses for the event for years, and police came to her house and warned her that if anybody was badly hurt, they'd hold her responsible. She made the cheese anyway.
Okay, so question for you. What was her response to that?
Her response to that cannot be said on public radio. Last question. The winner this year, Josh Shepard, shocked organizers when he announced right after he won the cheese. What? A, he didn't mean to compete in the race. He was going to watch it, but he tripped and rolled down the hill. One of everybody. B, he was a, quote, lactosexual and intended to marry the cheese. Or C, actually, he doesn't even really like cheese.
No, probably C, yeah.
C again. You're good. You're very good. Bill, how did Michaela do in this competition?
Well, she's 19 years old. She's an Olympic champion, and now she is a champion on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Michaela Schifrin is the reigning Olympic and world champion in slalom. Michaela Schifrin, thank you so much for being with us. Michaela Schifrin, give it up for her. Back at the end of last year, we spoke to Baz Luhrmann, the Australian director of such over-the-top sagas as Moulin Rouge and the recent The Great Gatsby with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Given the over-the-top style of his films, we assumed his home life was just like that. But he denied it.
You have such a theatrical imagination. I just imagine you growing up with a traveling circus, at the very least, the daughter of a ballerina.
I grew up in a very isolated, tiny town, and no one ever wins the bet when they say their town was smaller than mine, because it was 11 houses. It was very isolated. But I was always doing pretty much what I'm doing now, which is imagining, creating, telling stories, stuff like that.
And did your parents encourage you in this?
Fantastically so. My father was so intense. He was in the Vietnam War. And, I mean, we had to learn to paint and ballroom dance and do commando training. We were the sort of Renaissance.
Wait a minute. So he was like, I'm going to send you out in the wilderness with nothing but a knife and a beautiful chiffon gown, and I want you to get back alive? Was it like that?
No. In truth, and this is the truth, he did take myself, my two other brothers, he did dump us in the wilderness with not even a knife, just a rope. Right, and on the way back, I found the chiffon gown. But, you know, he really did send us out into the wilderness, absolutely. And you know what?
What?
We were terrified. And when we got back, we found out, of course, he secretly followed us. But he used to do it on a regular basis, actually.
I have to ask, how do you think this has affected your art?
Well, it's made me realize that you have to follow your own course, that it's going to be scary, that you have to be well-prepared, well-trained, and hopefully there's someone looking after you.
So what you're basically...
I would get a much more literal lesson from that.
Like?
Lesson, my takeaway from that would be, sometimes Dad abandons me in the wilderness.
But at least I have this rope.
Yeah. And so, I mean, has it given
you... You've seen my movies, right? Yeah. I try and explain it in the films. Surely it's clear.
So your last movie was The Great Gatsby, which...
Yes, you can blame me. Yes.
No, it was amazing. It was great. And it's so incredibly lavish and huge in every way. It looked like it must have been a real joy to shoot.
No, it was not. The thing about it is, it ultimately comes down to a very simple drama of a few people in a room. But the big thing was, I had to create all of Long Island... sunny Long Island in Australia, and it did nothing but rain every single day. So I had the world's best cast in the world's worst situation.
So you went to Australia and you built Long Island in Australia.
Well, Gatsby's mansion is in fact my old high school.
No, is it really?
Yes, it is, with a bit of CG.
So that must have been, I mean, I've heard of people going back to their high school proms to show how successful they are. But, or rather, I should say high school reunions, but you actually went back to your high school and used it as a movie set. Did that give you a... Were you popular in high school?
I don't know. Is being hit on the head with a clump of dirt continually and being jeered at popular? I wasn't really, no.
So, I mean,
I don't understand
like
why you need a high school that big for a town with 11 houses.
Well, I ran away and then found my mother and she put me in that big school.
Oh, I see.
Well, now, did the people hitting you with clumps of dirt realize you had commando training?
Our usual fantasy, if we're not happy in high school, is I'm going to come back someday, and I'm going to be successful, I'm going to show everybody.
That's exactly, I think, what happened.
Did you ever say to yourself when you were having clumps of dirt thrown at your head in high school, someday I'm going to come back here and use the gutted shell of this building as a set for my $200 million movie with the biggest movie star in the world?
I had something like that in mind, yes.
Did you really? Baz Luhrmann, we are so delighted to talk to you, and now it is time to play a game that we're calling...
Guten Tag, Mike.
So you're from Australia?
Mike.
Mike.
Very good.
That was
Mike.
Good.
Yeah, that's his good Australian.
Yeah. Well, you're from Australia, where people are rugged and tough and independent. We're from America, where people are dumb, and mix up Australia and Austria. Well, we're going to ask you three questions about that other country, Austria. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their voicemail. Carl, who is director Baz Luhrmann playing for?
Baz is playing for Aya Bowman of Mesa, Arizona.
You ready to play?
Sorry, Aya. I can tell you now the chances are very slim. I'll do my best.
All right. With that out of the way, let's go. Here's your first question. So there's this town in Austria, and it's pretty well known because its name is Fuching, which is pronounced that way, but spelled... like a word in English that's pronounced not quite that way, if you get my drift. So they're getting very tired of having all their signs stolen and people coming and laughing and pointing at the signs. So they tried to change their name. But there was a problem, and they couldn't do it. What was the problem? A, they tried to change it to Fuging Austria, but that name was taken. B, they tried changing it to Making Sweet, Sweet Love Austria, but the signs still got stolen. Or C, the mayor vetoed the plan on the grounds that he really liked being called the Fuking Mayor. It's A, Fuging. You're right. That's what happened. It turns out there's another town in Austria called Fuging.
Yes, there is. Fuging.
All right. That's good. You got one right. So they've got McDonald's in Austria, of course, just like everywhere. Well, a few years back, McDonald's Austria showed a controversial ad. Was it which of these? A, a somber 90-second black-and-white short film called simply Grimace's Funeral. B, a beautiful full-color photo running in magazines of a baby appearing to breastfeed from a sesame seed bun. Or C, a TV spot with a slogan, translated from the German, don't worry about the name, McDonald's, no actual Irish here.
No, it's B.
It's B, the sesame seed bun being the baby breastfeeding from the sesame seed bun.
I think so.
You're right. You're doing very well. Last question. Austria is a great place to visit, and tourists can enjoy which of these unique attractions? A, a trip to the centuries-old Starkenberger Brewery, where you can literally go swimming in a pool of beer. B, the world-famous Uder's Schnitzelhaus, where you can get a Stop Schnitzing t-shirt. Or C, the Vienna sausage restaurant, where the waiters remove that gross goo for you from the can.
It's B.
It's B. It's the Stop Schnitzing t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was actually the brewery where you can swim in the beer.
For
those of you who have that dream. Carl, how did Baz Luhrmann do on our show?
Well, he had two correct answers, Peter. That's enough to win.
You won! You don't need to feel bad. Baz Luhrmann's latest movie is The Great Gatsby. His new album, which you can get, he produced it, is called Yellow Cocktail Music. The Great Gatsby Jazz Recordings. The movie is The Great Gatsby. And our guest, Baz Luhrmann. Thank you so much for being here. It was really fun to have you. NPR is supported by Target with the Made to Matter collection, handpicked by Target. Brands like Annie's, Method, Seventh Generation, Happy Baby, and more are just an aisle away. The Made to Matter collection is available to explore in-store or online at target.com/made-to-matter. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks, our house manager is Don Hall, our assistant house manager is Tyler Green, our intern is Jeanette Harris, Third Circuit Courts of Appeals, our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks to John Zajac and Liz Tlarchik at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme, our program is produced by Eva Waltrover and Miles Dernboss. Technical direction is from Lorna White and Gary Yak, our CFO is Ann Nien. Our production coordinator is Mr. Robert Sodapants Newhouse, our senior producer is Ian Chillog, and the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Thanks to all of our guests, Mr. Bill Curtis, our panelists, and of course our scorekeeper emeritus, Mr. Carl Castle. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR.